rich percent. I wonder then why the middle class is going under when the ones above them got a cover and come to collect. And many have no access to banking, making payments or saving, so more fees are taken. And every day the gatekeepers are trying to stop change. We cannot wait. Welcome to the blockchain.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. Heard immediately after Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew, the second half of the two-hour financial and cryptocurrency block that's here every Monday for you on WWPR. Well, what's happened this week on your roundup of Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, blockchain news, and more? Well, the price of Bitcoin blows through $10,000 to $11,000. What's next? Well, Bitcoin real daily volume passes 1 billion. It's amazing that we use terms because, like, real daily volume, but that's what we're doing.
But, yeah, that was my guy. Is it real?
It says it's real. I put quotes in it.
Okay.
And the Bank of International Settlements, that's the Bank of Central Banks, has warned that the financial services poised to be offered by big tech firms such as Facebook, Google, and Amazon could generate new risks for the banking sector. And probably the not too well-known Financial Action Task Force standards released Friday. Well, what does that mean for your crypto? Well, you may be surprised on all of that. We've got much, much more and a guest standing by, too, but let's see who's in the studio today. Well, of course, that's the theme music from Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew. We have half the team here. He's Andrew, but we call him Andy. Hi, Andy.
Good afternoon, Henry.
Yes.
Good afternoon. We had some technical difficulties, and I just reached underneath the desk here, and I just flipped the switch, and I said, oh, my God, I hope I didn't shut down the radio station.
No, it's on this side.
Okay, good.
And that's why we keep our other person here close by for emergencies like that.
So you said that only proves that.
And the amazing thing about that is physically he's to my right and Andy's left, but philosophically it's backwards. It's Augie. He's back in the studio. Augie, how you been?
Well, I'm more conservative than people realize, but then again, I am not a stuck-in-the-wood conservative. I am a conservative, so that's the difference. But what about stability? And that's what Facebook offered last week, didn't it?
Yes, and we're going to be getting to that in just a little bit, but we have our guest standing by.
The way out, it's on the way out.
We got a phone line ringing,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, rapper in, huh?
John, are you standing by there?
All right.
Let me see who's on there. John Sacco's with us. Now. Good to hear from you. Let's hit this button and tell these people you're live on the air.
You're live on the air.
Or maybe not.
Okay. Must be one of those robocalls they're trying to legislate.
Yeah.
So, John Sacco is, I looked up on the rundown, he's a frequent guest, but not too frequently recently, and that's my fault. It's been back in March since the last time we talked to you. John Sacco is a cybersecurity expert and cryptocurrency enthusiast. Actually, he's an OG kind of cryptocurrency enthusiast. Yeah. He goes way, way back. Yeah, years.
Yeah.
More than months.
I was going to say, yeah, you're almost OG if you're in 18 months now, you know?
Yeah. If you've been through crypto winter, you're like...
He's weathered several storms, let's say.
Yeah, so I was at the Battle of the Bulge. John, what you been up to?
That's right. We're all seasoned at this point, I think. At least anybody who's been following since the big price movement a couple years back. Been great. It's been a whirlwind watching these charts. I think we can comfortably say that the bull market is back, that the bottom is in. And crypto winter is over, although we've known that, I think, for a little while now. But it's great to be back with you guys.
Absolutely. And hello, John. It's Andy.
Yeah. Hey,
Andy. Hello. Yes. And Augie as well. Great to hear from you guys.
Are you doing cybersecurity work right now? I mean, you don't have to reveal any top secret stuff to us, but is that still your focus?
Yeah, I can tell you that that's still my focus, still primarily in the crypto and in the blockchain space. In particular, we've had the passage and the signing of the House Bill 735 here in Tallahassee, where that's going to establish a blockchain task force. So I'm looking to at least be involved in the periphery on that, and maybe in some capacity, although I have nothing to share today with in that regard, but maybe in the future as that unfolds, it's going to be about a six-month engagement where once the task force assembles, they'll then have 6 months to conclude and come up with basically what Florida's plans are for the blockchain. So being a little bit involved with that in terms of consulting, but mostly with just focusing on the crypto space day to day. There's certainly a lot going on with different coins getting released, different projects getting announced, and I've been active in at least one of them in terms of helping launch the Cosmos network, which is it's in the top 20 of the coins now. It's about $1 billion network that I was part of being a validator node. So it launched with 100 nodes, and I'm setting up a staking service for Cosmos Atom holders, anybody holding an Atom token.
And what is the function of that token?
So right now it's purely speculative, but it's speculative, but it's based on the Tendermint consensus protocol, and the Cosmos network essentially is going to help power blockchains that talk to each other. So one of the most popular coins that is using the Tendermint and Cosmos engine is the Binance chain. And so it's going to be a decentralized exchange that will interlink with the Cosmos atoms and other applications that are going to launch, sort of like satellite blockchains that can intercommunicate. They have a inter-blockchain communication, an IBC communication layer. And so there's a couple projects doing something similar to this. I don't want to endorse as an investment vehicle. There's certainly a lot of other staking coins. There's Tezos, that's a similar type project. And then we have Libra coin, which I think Facebook is setting up a very similar model, although it's different in that they're going to be, instead of 100 public validator nodes that anyone could join, like what we created with the Cosmos network, Facebook's going to have a, I think, permissioned network that's going to have these corporate entities running nodes, and their goal is to get 100 validator nodes.
And you have permission to give them $10 million, then.
Let's
hold Facebook for just a moment, because
we're going to discuss Facebook.
We're going to discuss Facebook. But I just want to recap here. So you're a node. You run a node for this network.
I'm running a validator node, one of 100 that makes up the Cosmos.
And so it's a proof-of-stake system.
That's right, and it's trading on all the major exchanges now, Kraken, Binance, and it's number 17 on CoinMarketCap. So it's a new coin. I'm excited about it. It's been around since 2014 as a research project, and I think that it's going to be one of the ones to watch, along with your EOSes of the world, your Tezoses, your IOTAs. You know, there's a lot of really interesting projects that I think are in that top 20 that
Well, I'm sure now that it's been mentioned here on the show, it's going to be mooning any time. One last thing about the blockchain task force, and that is, have any of the members of the task force been announced yet?
I do not believe any have been publicly announced. I don't know that anything other than since the signing has been released, although I haven't necessarily been scanning the Tallahassee news waves, so something might have come out. But I haven't heard of any news yet.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into some of the other news of the week.
I tell you, I've got news for you. Somehow,
Well, it rings true to me, as many things do to the wishful. Bitcoin prices increased by 16% in the past week against the U.S. dollar following its initial breakout of the $10,000 mark on June 2nd. Did we hit 10,000 on? I guess we did.
Did we?
Well, just for a moment.
It was just that. I don't know. June 2nd?
That's what it says. It must
be
true.
We're nowhere near 10,000 on June 2nd.
Earlier this month, the quote, real 10 volume of Bitcoin, which refers to the daily spot volume, maybe when I copied and pasted, I lost the second digit to the June.
June 17th.
Yeah. Earlier this month, the real 10, quotation marks around real 10, volume of Bitcoin, which refers to the daily spot volume of exchanges with more than 1 million in verifiable daily volume, as found by Bitwise Asset Management, hovered at around 500 million. Now, if we get 10 exchanges, and we're talking about real volume, and our level for entry into the exclusive Real 10 Club is $1 million of verifiable daily volume, whatever happened to the billions and billions that was listed on CoinMarketCap so long ago? Well, in the last several days, the Real 10 volume of the asset has spiked to over $1.5 billion, peaking at $2
billion. Is that dollars?
Yes. I was referring to not Bitcoin, it's to dollars.
That's a billion with a B.
Yes, $1.5 billion and $2 billion. And this was in this past week from the way I'm reading this article. Although it does get confusing in the next paragraph down, but we'll get to confusion soon enough. The Real 10 volume does not include BitMEX, which processed more than $10 billion in trades on its peak days throughout June. But I don't know if that means future contracts.
That's futures.
Yeah. So that's not real volume to me.
No.
That's futures volume. Which also brings us to CME and CBOE, which still is trailing off the CBOE, but CME is here for the long haul. It had 91 million, 35% for February 2019. This is where it got very confusing for me. Significant 91 million, especially compared to real spot volume, 35% for February 2019. Well, anyway, we're going to go ahead and not try and parse these stats much more. But it does speak to the increase in institutional volume. But when we talk about the CME, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, and foreshadowing more institutional money and perhaps even an exchange-traded fund, if that's even a relevant hope for anymore, as we seem to be bypassing that and leaving it in the rearview mirror. So,
and you had the EFE volume, Grayscale Ethereum Trust volume.
Yeah, we'll get to that soon enough. So let's go to our cryptocurrency enthusiast, cybersecurity expert, John Sacco. John, what do you make of all these volume numbers and real volume and not so real volume?
Yeah, although it is the one listed ticker symbol on the OTC market. It was trading at over $15,000 of Bitcoin today, and there's significant retail investors that are looking for exposure to Bitcoin in their portfolio. We can see with that premium being nearly 40%.
Now, I got a little bit of blip in your audio when you started your sentence. Were you referring to the CME?
I'm referring to the GBTC synthetic, the Grayscale product.
Okay.
With CME futures, we're seeing premiums as well, although not quite the $15,000 Bitcoin that we're seeing on the GBTC ticker symbol. But I think that the market, the volume largely was artificial, and we were right to call out the wash trading and much of the overseas trading volume being fake. But what I'm seeing with this price action is I'm seeing we're moving up a few hundred dollars, and then it's like the market is settling where it's able to pull back. We're getting some selling action, and then it's marching right up. And to me, this looks like classic accumulation, and onwards towards higher highs. There doesn't appear to be much in the form of resistance. I think between now and the 13,000 range is going to be significant in terms of resistance. But beyond that, it's the sky is the limit. I mean, this is this rally appears to have some real momentum because of these periodic pullbacks. I mean, Andy, am I wrong on kind of seeing these $400 or $500 pullbacks as being healthy in terms of what the overall growth is?
I agree 100% on that. And what I see is new money coming into this market because it's just blowing out resistance levels.
The GBTC, the Grayscale Investment Trust product, that is the only exchange-traded fund, but it trades on the over-the-counter markets, has historically had a 30 to a 50% premium in it, even from the good times. And then in the bad times, the crypto winter, it did shrink to very minimal. But ever since the run has started, that premium has increased. And just for people that were hanging on...
I tried to short that.
Hanging on our talk about ETHE, which is the Ethereum vehicle that Grayscale brought forward just on Friday, which represents a tenth of Ether.
That thing is going insane right now.
Trading around $300 today.
I tried to short it.
For one-tenth. Intrinsic value of 30 cents. So
that's
really...
$33,000 Ethereum.
Right. Yeah. So being able to get a GBTC trading at only a 50% premium to the price of Bitcoin is a bargain compared to buying the ETHE, which is trading at a 1,000% premium to the intrinsic value of the ETH.
I think there's definitely, it can move down 100 points or so.
But we can fix you up with that, Augie. Yeah.
Well, I was just waiting for the next backflip that you were going to do, Henry. I was watching you, and it was amazing what your athletic virtuosity.
Yes.
It was amazing to watch. But in this regard, I really would like to get definition of what the hell is a market.
Well,
the term market means something.
All right, so we were talking about just now, well, it's working from present backwards, GBTC and ETHE are the only products traded on a stock market, although it's the over-the-counter market,
right,
not the NASDAQ or the NYSE.
There's also a Ethereum Classic market that's been around for a while, although that one has just as ridiculous premiums in at least 200%.
Well, that's a bargain.
Yeah.
And compared to the Ethereum,
Grayscale head investment that they have some of these smaller cap coins.
Well, you know,
GBTC is really the only one that has a thin spread and actually, real volume in terms of, you can get an ask in a, bid in. Whereas I don't think the ETHE product has had really any time to develop a price.
Or for people to read the prospectus. So, then working backwards from that, we were talking about the Bitcoin futures market, which in the U.S. is the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, but there's numerous ones around the globe. And do you have any thoughts in general for Augie on that?
I don't have any thoughts other than what I've noticed is that when the markets close on Friday, we tend to see a huge spread between those future contracts. And I don't know what that's about. I'd be curious to get Andy's take on whether there's a play there or if it's just a temporary type of loop.
You know, I've noticed that every close on Friday, Bitcoin seems to at least last three or four Fridays.
You said that earlier.
Yeah, the Bitcoin seems to want to rally, and then Sunday before the open of futures, it looks like it wants to pull back. I'm not really...
It's almost as though there's bag holders from Friday on the futures exchange in the U.S. that don't want to be caught holding the bag. And someone's trying to give them a little help on Sunday.
Yeah, so with that volatility that we've been seeing, I can see the spread for the futures market that would increase going into Friday because it's been a consistent pattern. I mean, are you really going to short Bitcoin? And if you're going to, you're going to want more of a premium. You're going to want something a lot over where spot is, 100, 200 points above it in order for you to short. If it was me, that's what I would want. I wouldn't dare short this.
But the increase in volume there, Augie, also means that more of the traditional financial players are moving into the larger aggregate market of all things Bitcoin.
Okay. All right.
There was some volatility. Sunday night was just nuts.
John, you know, it looks to me like, going back to something you talked about before, about the little pullback, relatively little pullbacks of $500.
Yeah.
And Andy, when I look at those that volume that gets dumped into the market on the charts that I'm looking at, it seems like if we had seen that on the bull market, but just a month ago or a month and a half ago, we would have had a lot slower time to recover, as in like a day or a week, as opposed to what seems to happen in hours now.
Yeah, there's certainly some bullish momentum. What's not getting a lot of attention right now, or people aren't talking about, is the Fidelity product is supposedly being launched within weeks or days even, and that's going to certainly require a lot of Bitcoin accumulation in terms of, preparing for the launch of that product, or maybe they've already begun offering it.
Now, you're not referring to the custody product. You're referring to the actual trading of Bitcoin, correct?
I'm referring to the custody solution that they've implemented that they're now going to be using as the trading, platform that's going to be released. What I heard last was within weeks, and last article being a couple weeks back. Fidelity being, $7 trillion and privately, managed assets, that's significant in terms of, potentially reducing the supply or what's on, the float that's out there available in terms of Bitcoin. I've heard something that, just the GBTC product is consuming somewhere in the neighborhood of half of all of the Bitcoins that are mined today, just from that one product. So, it doesn't take a lot of these institutional products to really... where are all the Bitcoins that are going to...
Well, the projections for Square are very similar, too, and the growth of the Square app, Bitcoin trading, is on a trajectory that it's going to start using up the newly minted Bitcoin. So the finite supply, we're going to see some real effects. Let's go to a break real quickly and come back. We'll get to Facebook's Libra and some of the wrinkles about that. We have John Sacco, cybersecurity expert and cryptocurrency enthusiast, on the line with us. Are you in Tallahassee right now?
I am, sir.
For all the way from Tallahassee, Augie and Andy in here, and we'll be back right after this. Trying to get into Bitcoin but don't know where to start? Bite Federal ATMs make it easy. Safe, secure, and reliable, a Bite Federal ATM introduces you to cryptocurrency investing with a method you're familiar with at a real physical location. If you've ever used a bank ATM, then you're ready to step up to a Bite Federal ATM and start building your digital assets. Located throughout Florida and Georgia, there's a Bite Federal ATM near you. Go to BiteFederal.com to find a location for you. That's BiteFederal.com, and you'll find a real phone number, a real email, and real people you've heard live on The Henry Raine Show. If you enjoy the trading and investment ideas you hear on Talking Markets with Mark and Andy, then you're going to want to become a member of their SeekingCryptos.com membership service. And you can join for absolutely free. When you sign up for a free membership at SeekingCryptos.com, you'll start receiving analysis and perspective by email on trade examples, cryptocurrencies, stocks, metals, educational content, and exclusive offers. SeekingCryptos.com has something for you advanced traders too. Check out the premium membership, the expert swing trades, or the quant geeks packages. Seeking Cryptos has skin in the game just like you. They post their trades in real time, and you can follow the results right on their portfolio page. So what are you waiting for? Go to SeekingCryptos.com and sign up for your free membership now.
Alcobra Massage has been providing quality massage therapy in Bradenton for over 5 years. and we are proud and excited to announce we've expanded our practice and boutique to a larger facility. Located at the historic downtown Bradenton, we're in a charming craftsman-style building across the street from the Spring Hill Suites by Marriott. Alcover Massage offers many treatment rooms, a spacious lobby, and doorfront parking spaces just for our clients. But what we're most proud of is our highly qualified massage therapists offering great service to our valued clients. Availability and instant booking is found at lauraalcover.com. Alcover Massage. Like us on Facebook, 204 13th Street West, Bradenton, Florida, 34205. Book your appointments now at lauraalcover.com or call us at 941-592-3187. MN number 34081, MA number 50525.
Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM, heard every Monday, 5:05 p.m. to 6 p.m. immediately after Talking Markets with Mark and Andrew. That's brought to you by SeekingCryptos.com. You can find out a lot more about trading multiple markets, not just cryptocurrency markets, if you go there. And we have John Sacco. He is a cybersecurity expert and a longtime cryptocurrency enthusiast on the line with us from Tallahassee. And we didn't have a chance last week to talk to John when the big news of the week was, of course, Facebook's announcement of Libra and the foundation that they were starting, Calibra, I believe it's called. This week, the Bank of International Settlements, which is considered the central bank of central bankers, warned that the financial services poised to be offered by big tech. Firms such as almost had a Freudian slip there. Big tech firms such as Facebook, Google, and Amazon could generate new risks for the banking sector. One of the Winklevoss twins tweeted this week that he thought all of the FANG stocks, Facebook, Apple, Amazon, I don't know why Netflix would, but Google Alphabet, will have their own cryptocurrency. Anyway, the BIS, Bank of International Settlements, is owned by 60 of the world's central banks. Published a report on its stance on June 23rd. I'm not going to go too deep into that because we're going to be looking at Libra and Facebook in a larger point of view here in a second.
You said that, and it's interesting because I think that Amazon, Google, Facebook, they all have a good, they have good. I think the two that really would make a difference is Apple and Google. Because everybody has a phone, and you could have the Android coin, and you could have the Siri coin.
Right.
And everybody...
Thought Amazon, but I see your point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that,
we could have the Huawei coin, but we don't need that because we got the Alipay and whatever they call the WeChat Pay. Anyway, that follows on top. We had Maxine Waters requesting that Facebook... stop development of Libra until they can hold hearings on it. That was actually after the Republicans on the committee came forward with that. We've seen the European countries, particularly France, coming out saying they want to slow down.
Right after
down.
Banking.
Like they didn't know this was happening or coming on the board.
Did you see Tom Lee, and I don't mean to interrupt, but did you see Tom Lee, what he said about Facebook coin?
Well, tell us.
He said... Facebook makes about $50 a revenue per user, two billion users. He said the average bank makes $1,000 a year per client.
That seems like an awful big number.
That
wasn't my account most
of the
time.
No, it's not your account. But think about it. How many people, bad checks, $30 fees here and all this stuff. They make, but regardless.
What are checks?
But that's what Tom Lee said. He said it's 1,000. He goes, this could increase.
Probably when you go into the corporate world and everything
absolutely.
Like that.
So he goes, there's like a 20 multiple that could be on Facebook's profits with this.
We're going to look at the workings of that aspect of this proposal in a second. But since we didn't get John's take on the whole thing last week, he's had a chance to sit back, see the reaction in media and government. So what are your thoughts about the picture now a week into it?
Well, I think it's clear that Libra is positive news for the cryptocurrency space. It's certain, the question of whether this hurts Bitcoin or this hurts Ethereum or the crypto space, is I think that's been settled with the recent uptick in prices. I love the project personally. I think that Facebook is actually taking a more measured and reasonable approach here in the way that they are organizing themselves. In other words, they're decentralizing themselves out of the mechanics of this cryptocurrency, and I believe one of the bigger reasons is because they don't want it specifically tied to their corporate governance structure, nor do they want to have it interfere with their overall profits and bottom line, and essentially get into the market of being a central bank. What Libra does, or the Calibra Foundation does, is it establishes a panel of which Facebook would be one of 100 or up to 100 of these stakeholders that would all make the governance decisions for this network. And so in that way, this is one of the most real deal cryptocurrencies that has been launched by any government or any corporate or government entity or in some ways even in the open source blockchain space. This is more decentralized than many of the projects that we see with validator nodes. If you think about the way that some of these stakeholders are naturally opposed to one another.
So John, let me just stop you for just a second, because you're drawing a distinction there that may not all the listeners may not catch. You're talking about it's the most decentralized
of
proof of stake, but it's not the most decentralized of proof of work. You would still put Bitcoin in that
decentralized
category.
Than Bitcoin, but it's more decentralized than Ripple and EOS, in the sense that Facebook is not going to control this once the blockchain is launched. The way that they have designed this is that they're going to be part of a governance structure that they will have one vote of 100, and Uber will have a vote, PayPal will have a vote, MasterCard, Visa, et cetera, will have a vote. This is a very interesting project.
Are all of these stakeholders, are they going to be running a node or validating a node? Okay.
Yes. For this to be a truly, so they're essentially building off of a lot of the Tendermint consensus work that was done in creating what's called, and I'm going to get really technical here, but a Byzantine fault-tolerant system, meaning that...
Say it again slowly, though, for us.
So this is a Byzantine fault-tolerant proof-of-stake blockchain, and this is a latest iteration of this type of a blockchain. In other words, they're building this consensus model that is going to require a proof-of-stake-based setup with these nodes, and architecturally these nodes have to be distinct and geographically all over the place, and also politically opposed in some sense, because the fault tolerance, if you will, what Byzantine fault tolerance means is how many bad actors can we have?
What will we be most familiar with as a Byzantine fault tolerance system?
Neo? Is Neo Byzantine?
Every blockchain is considered in some ways Byzantine fault tolerant, but the question is to what degree. And Bitcoin uses the proof of work algorithm, which is the best we have so far. Neo does use a proof of stake type system, as does EOS, as does Ethereum will eventually become a proof of stake system, although it's currently proof of work. And what I'm talking about here are the mechanics of this blockchain that Libra is going to be using, which is not unlike many of the blockchains we have today. And essentially, they're going to have these corporations running the nodes, and we're going to have these identified nodes that each participate in this blockchain. This is much, much different than, Apple Pay or Amazon Coin or any of the things that we've seen up to this point that would supposedly be considered, blockchains launched by these large corporations.
JP Morgan Coin?
I know,
R3, and, we've have had some of these projects like Hyperledger and R3 that have attempted this, but Facebook essentially said, we've got it all figured out. Here's what we're launching, and we're going to do it early 2020. What we don't know yet are some of the more interesting dynamics, like how is the pegging of the assets going to work, the basket of goods, you know, and how is the staking mechanism going to work? In other words, here's my theory, is that people will be able to earn interest or dividends by holding Libra tokens and by staking them with one of their service providers, whether it's Uber, whether it's within their Facebook app, and they'll essentially earn interest in real time, much like you can do on these proof-of-stake networks like Cosmos.
John, let me pause you right there, because I've heard that idea put forward quite often. Well, I know Augie has a question I want to get in, so I want us to put a bookmark right there on the potential of interest for the Libras that are staked with someone, because it's actually contrary to what the white paper itself says. But let's go with Augie.
Yeah, the fault tolerated implies that there's fault all over the place, and fault tolerated, how much, what level, and how often, and whatever verb goes to that. The stability that Libra offers is what people have been looking for, and so anchoring anything of mercurial results, such as...
Well, we're going to go into the peg in a minute, so let's stick with the fault tolerance part first.
So when you allow anything to justify something just because the terminology says, well, it's fault tolerant, just accept it,
deal with it.
That's just grow up, so to speak.
I don't think fault tolerant has the same meaning.
Yeah, what does that
actually
mean?
Fault tolerance
what that
mean?
Means basically is that, let's say if we have 100, instead of having miners like with Bitcoin, we have 100 identified participants of this network. And these are all, in the case of Libra, they're all going to be companies like Uber, Lyft, et cetera. And fault tolerance, what Byzantine fault tolerance means for the PBFT systems of today, like Tendermint, what Facebook is modeling this after, is saying that 33 of these 100 nodes can be malicious, can be actively attacking the network. And as long as less than one-third of the network is malicious or attacking the network will remain functional and fine and whole, and everything will go on just normally. At the point of which more than one-third of the network begins harming the network, double spending transactions, interfering with things, then what these practical Byzantine fault tolerant networks do is they essentially shut down until the network can reorganize. And so the stake system, the ability to have tokens created by owning the tokens for securing the network, is what is helping to secure these Byzantine fault-tolerant blockchains, because it penalizes any users who are actively being malicious. So not only are they not going to earn new coins and participate in the network, but they actually get their funds slashed or can have their funds taken for being a bad miner, essentially, although they're not
miners.
So
you have too big a stake in it to be a bad actor.
That's right, and so their rewards will actually get cut or slashed, is the technical term that these blockchains use. And so Ethereum 2.0 is going to work like this. We have projects like Plasma, which is largely coming out of the Ethereum community, and then we have Cosmos, which is the 100 validator node that has the proof of stake consensus built into the protocol. And so Facebook is building off of these exact same open blockchain protocols. The only difference is that instead of having public validators that anyone could join, they're going to have these semi-permissioned corporate entities running these nodes. And if it works similar to the proof-of-stake networks that are out today, which from what I'm looking like, it will be, users would have the option to stake their coins with one of these companies. So they would be able to have their coins with their Libra coins with PayPal and be able to potentially earn. Now, I haven't dug too deeply into the white paper, so if the white paper is counter to that, I'd be curious to get your thoughts
on that. We'll get to that right now, then. So, yeah. But what you're talking about with what happens internally reminds me anecdotally of this friend of mine back in the 80s who was a programmer back then. He was working on a team for GTE, I think it was, with a new billing system. Yeah, it goes way back.
GTE.
Yes. And he was making the point to me at a lunch that in a conversation with his coworkers on the team, that they just, in their friendly discussion, they said, and you got to think of 1980s programmers, which was a much smaller yeah. group of people than we exist now in programming, even though we need lots more. He was like, you know, we thought we could just send a tenth or a hundredth of a penny of every bill to ourselves, and we would be rich for our lives. Because there was that volume of customer base that, and who would miss that tiny bit? Because they were structuring the distribution, and the money would come in and then be distributed out. Now, of course, I'm sure they didn't do that, and he doesn't seem to be living, you know, wildly now. But it takes me to the point where you've got over a billion, maybe as many as over 2 billion users of this system, potentially. And so teensy bits of money can make a big deal for the people or the entities involved. So when you go to the Libra white paper, and you can look at all the other stuff, but I focused on the Libra Reserve and the exchanges. Now, there's not a whole lot of information there, but actually, if you get to the white paper, you can dig a little deeper, too. So just a couple highlights here. So you would appreciate this, Andy, because you know you're backing Libra with something. Gold is how many currencies have been. So they address that. Instead of backing Libra with gold, though, it will be backed by a collection of low-volatility assets, such as bank deposits and short-term government securities, in currencies from stable and reputable central banks.
Wait. That's an oxymoron there.
Yeah, well, I knew you would think. But so we're talking about actual, wherever the...
They're
talking about having the foundation in Switzerland, so I'm thinking they're not going to concentrate it all in one bank. But for talking purposes, let's say there's this bank account, and it's going to hold the different currencies, dollars,
so
and
like
euros,
the BXY, pretty much the
pounds, things like that. They're going to have accounts where the just straight currency can be held, and then maybe it'll hold like 2-year treasury notes or something. What's shorter than a 2-year?
You can go down to one month, I think. Yeah,
okay.
1 month.
So more likely to the shorter end of that. And you'd get those in, I guess, euros and other things, too.
Well, you know,
and
do
you have
really
these...
want to own a... I guess that's the thing with quantitative easing going on.
Well, let's stick with what...
it's a good point, though. Treasury would actually be a negative...
We're going to get to how we come up with the value of a Libra. But let's start with just the nuts and bolts. These are what are in the basket. Short-term government securities. It's not going to be 10-year notes. It's not going to be something like that. It's something that's very liquid and easily exchanged.
Yeah, see, okay. You just lost me there.
All right.
Well, it's shares of Facebook.
Well, you know, I'd rather that than the Treasury bills.
It says government securities. Well, we're just sticking with the white paper.
You're printing more Treasury securities. That's all you're doing.
We're sticking with the white paper because I'm getting to the point when we see where the money is.
All right.
The money that's being made is.
Okay.
Now, I don't have John's insight into how the Libras are distributed out when they're created.
I have.
One Libra will not... Okay, now this is a quote from the white paper that'll make you raise your eyebrow, I think. One Libra will not always be able to convert into the same amount of a given local currency. In other words, Libra is not a peg to a single currency. Okay, we get that, because you get a basket of them. Rather, as the value of the underlying assets move, the value of one Libra in any local currency may fluctuate. Well, that makes sense on its face. And you go in. there is a quote from a spokesperson. This is outside the white paper. The spokesperson says, a blend of multiple currencies is how he describes this, or she describes this, so its value will fluctuate in any given local currency, and exchanges will charge a spread above or below the value of the reserve. I don't know why they would want to charge it below, but that's what it says. The individual, but anyway, these individual exchanges, whether it's Visa or, you know, whoever's exchanging these Libra for whether the service or product you want, will have a spread that's determined by them, not by the foundation.
Well, you know, and it makes sense above and below, because whenever you enter, you get a swap. So whenever you pay a swap on a Forex trade, you pay something depending on what side of the trade, whether the currency is in demand or not. You either get paid, or you end up paying for that swap. But yeah,
well,
the
customer is always going to be on one side of that.
Yeah, and it's
trade.
Always going to be tilted to the, you know.
Interest on the reserve. This is back to the white paper. Interest on the reserve assets. We said we'd come to interest. Will be used to cover the cost of the system, ensure low transaction fees, pay dividends to investors who provided capital to jumpstart the ecosystem, not necessarily Libra holders. And this is actually from the white paper. I'm not inserting this as my own parentheses here. It says, read, quote, the Libra Association here, and then it links you to more definitions within the white paper ecosystem here, and support further growth and adoption. The rules for allocating interest on the reserve will be set in advance and will be overseen by the Libra Association. Users of Libra do not receive a return from the reserve, end of quote, from the white paper. So
to me, this is a speculative cryptocurrency, like all the others. And it's not a stable coin. It's not pegged to any particular asset, correct?
Well, it's going to be pegged. You're going to start with... I don't know which currencies, but we could say the British pound, the euro, the dollar, maybe the Swiss franc.
Swiss franc probably be in there. That's a pretty stable currency.
And, you know, I would think that
US dollar, Kiwi.
Once they accept the idea, maybe France will want the French franc in there. But basically the four we mentioned are the Japanese yen.
Yeah, I think, yeah, The major
we don't need any rupees or Chinese currency in there. We know who counts. So, and then their short-term notes,
which
that will be part of that. Okay, so you have these, and then all those currencies are in a constant state of flux. So that's why it's easy to say, well, we don't know that you'll always be able to exchange it for the same value. That would go okay. But now you look at where money is going to be made. And even though these assets are paying very little interest right now, and the U.S. the best, and you're approaching 2%, the time it's in there, you're talking like my friend in the GTE bills. You're talking fractions of a penny, but times 2 billion users. And then you also, on top of that, have the ability of all these Visa or whoever you're making these transactions through, Uber, they get to determine the spread, which, again, probably is just fractions of a penny, but it's like found money in a lot of ways. Because what did they, when you were using your Visa card at Uber, how much did Uber get to make off of that? Well, they made negative. They were paying Visa. Now they're going to get fractions of a penny, and depending on how they fiddle the spread, they get a little bit more. And who's to say they're exploiting it because, gee, I got something different over on Lyft, but everything changes constantly. That's my point, is that...
Do we know whether, how many Libra there are going to be and how new Libras will be issued?
It will change based on the underlying assets. There's more underlying assets are put in by the foundation members, and as individuals deposit money in their personal accounts, deposit to be converted to Libra, Maybe, John, if you don't have anything to do next Monday, we'll follow this up because we're up against the clock.
That's the golden question, because if this is truly supposed to be a blockchain and they're going to move towards decentralization, then you cannot have that real basket of assets be in any way tied to the day-to-day underpinnings of the crypto. In other words, to me, I believe that it's totally different than that. My thought that this is sort of like the Ethereum ICO.
Okay. John, unfortunately, I'm up a hard break where the other show is going to just play over top of us.
We need to have this discussion, though.
Yeah, I hope you'll come back next week, because what we didn't get into was the Financial Action Task Force standards that are suggested for 37 countries, and that includes the data that has to be captured by each country whenever cryptocurrency crosses borders now. So, John, I hope you're available next Monday. You're definitely invited back, and thank you for the time today.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
All right, thanks. So, we're not off the air yet.
Oh, we're not?
No.
Oh.
But I am getting ready to play the exit music. But we'll talk about these requirements, and you're going to be starting to think, Bitcoin vault in Coinbase. Yeah. And you, like me, probably when you think through this, I was reading this stuff just this morning, and I was like, maybe I better get that Trezor wallet or Ledger wallet or whatever it was a little bit sooner than I was planning on. We'll be back next Monday. Thanks, Augie, for being here, and Andy, with another Henry Rain Show.
Thank you, Henry.